Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Howdy, listeners from coast to coast, the Gulf to Canada and around the globe. Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And today, this dreary April spring storm day here in Wyoming that I am taping this show for you, we're going to be discussing our third installment of the collapse of civilizations, this time having to do with mismanagement of health, of food, of land, of resources, which, wow, causes division, which causes decay, which eventually causes collapse. I think you'll see the similarities between us and the civilizations of old. And I'm going to draw some lines for you today on some things which are highly unusual in nature, should we say suspect in nature, that are occurring around the planet right now, particularly here in North America and the United States. You know, the mess, the travails that the Texas agricultural community has been facing, with fires and feedlots burning down and all sorts of things. And now, oh, the avian flu in cattle. This is quite a story. And somehow it's jumped from a cow to a human. And somehow the CDC is passing out warnings. And somehow, you know, they already have, don't worry, they have a vaccine ready for this. Oh, and by the way, you know, you listen to different stories depending upon how much they want to fearmonger in you. A 5% to 60% mortality rate in humans. You know, yeah. Where have we heard this before? In the not-too-recent past, haven't we? And Oregon. I brought you that story a bit ago, but now they are turning the screws in Oregon on small farmers. I'm going to bring you that tale, too. Why don't we just say, without going into every detail in every state everywhere, and trust me, it's happening about everywhere, agricultural and ranch land, wide open spaces, the family rancher, and your food supply are all under attack simultaneously. See if you don't draw some, shall we say, links, some parallels in the historical story on civilizational collapse I'm bringing you today. And of course, climate change, which drives much of this in many ways, except it's not climate change, it's climate engineering. The question is all this intentional or just incompetent accidents? We'll talk about that in the rest of the story. And we're going to talk about, in conjunction with this preparedness, a little bit of what's happening in the economy that you may be peripherally aware of, maybe you've heard, or maybe you don't know, but you need to know. And of course, we're going to talk more about election fraud, kind of the next installment of that sordid tale of treason that I've been bringing you the last several weeks. And once again, this is not the stuff that we all know, the tampering with the machines, the connection to the internet, which is illegal, the mules dropping hundreds and thousands of ballots in drop boxes everywhere, which were illegally put there by private money, thank you Zuckerberg and the rest of his crew, the paper ballots wheeled in after voting closed in various areas like Fulton County, Georgia, in suitcases no less, the trucks dispersed with blank ballots, this is sworn testimony, to four eastern states, particularly Pennsylvania. We know all that stuff. There's been sworn testimony on it. There's documents out the yazoo. But what I'm going to bring you today is the next installment of all the insidious ways they are attacking your vote, our Constitution, our freedoms, and this country, and committing treason. It will not make you happy. And I'm going to give you another little list of things, like I did last week, about what you can do about it. Because, folks, there's nobody else. It's up to you, and it's up to me. So let's get started, shall we? How about the founder's quote to start off with? And I think we'll do a double quote today because both of them tie in beautifully to where we are headed in this show. Thomas Jefferson, quote, "I predict future happiness for Americans if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of taking care of them," unquote. And for his second quote, quote, "Do you want to know who you are? Don't ask, act. Action will delineate and define you," unquote. And folks, it is time to act. It is time to stand up. It is time to get off the couch. Delineate yourself as an American. And how about a ranch story for you? So this is kind of humorous. We have a great neighbor, but this is not the story that I was going to continue last week. It's a whole different deal. We still don't have an ending to that particular story I referenced a week ago. But we have a great neighbor. Love him to pieces. He is the quintessential fifth generation Wyoming rancher. Knows his stuff inside and out. Good in every single aspect of every single workings of his ranch, which is a beautiful property. Borders ours for a number of miles. And some of the water that we use for irrigation come from his place because he's upstream of us the way the ditch system is set out and the way the water is taken out of the creek. And I might add the way his reservoirs, his storage reservoirs, are set up upstream on the same drainages as our storage reservoirs. Obviously, water from his eventually comes down the drainage, gets used in irrigation, gets redeposited in the reservoirs in our place, and then gets disseminated again amidst the next terrace of fields. Every drop of water is worked four or five times. It is the ultimate in hydrological conservation. So he is a wily guy when it comes to water. He knows how every drop flows on every acre, on every inch of his ranch, and for that matter, on ours. And I called him the other day, and he's kind of short and curt. You know, he doesn't waste a lot of words. He doesn't talk a lot. And I always enjoy our conversations, although they are rather brief and to the point. And I said, can you let us know when you turn on such and such ditch this year? Give us a couple of days warning so we can get up there and get prepared, because it's kind of at the far corner of the headquarters ranch for us. And we have a pile of things to do, as I'm sure you do too, and blah, blah, blah. And he listened to me patiently, my discourse, for the 30 seconds or a minute, however long it went on. And then in his usual manner, very briefly and succinctly said, well, you ought to be preparing all year long. And, you know, I hung up the phone, kind of chuckling to myself because it's exactly the kind of response I should have expected. And I thought about it. And he's exactly right. We should have been preparing all this time, folks, for what we're facing now. The time is growing short on a whole bunch of tangents and on a whole bunch of levels. So perhaps the preparations that we have let slide in our personal lives, in our financial lives, in our quest to preserve our freedom and our property, perhaps it is time to make it double time and to get her done, as they say. In all these historical stories, kind of culminating in this series I'm doing on the civilizational collapse, there's common threads. It doesn't matter if it was in BC or AD or 100 years ago or 20 years ago. It doesn't matter what country it was, what continent it occurred on. The common threads are there is divisions sown within a society. It may be by provocateurs, it may be through propaganda, it may be just through the course of events. It may be instigated by foreign powers. Disease and famine and climate change in the long time past, climatological events that were natural, the eruption of volcanoes, the spewing of ash and SO2, all of these things are precipitators of civilizational collapse. Civilizational collapse is almost a step-by-step process. In some cases, in terms of history, it's relatively quick. In others, it's a slow downward spiral, accentuated by this problem and that problem, which grow and fester and accentuate that twisting into the bottom of the toilet bowl of civilizations, where many, many, many rest. In fact, there has been no civilization, think about this, there's been no civilization that has ever survived forever, period, bar none. No exceptions. Let's review again what a civilization is. The word civilization, and I don't think I've talked about this before, relates to the Latin word civilis, or city. So the most basic definition of the word civilization is a society made up of cities. But you know, early in the development of the term civilization, anthropologists and others used civilization and civilized society to differentiate between societies they found culturally superior, you know, and of course they were a part of those societies, and those that they thought were culturally inferior because they referred to as average or barbaric, and other societies that were morally wrong and backward, you know, all subjective terms. There is agreement, however, that civilizations have some kind of urban settlements. They are not nomadic. Their support of people living within the settlement to each other and to the community as a whole. And labor gets divided into specific jobs, which, by the way, is called the division of labor. So not everyone has to focus on growing their own food. I mean, if you are concentrated on survival, you can't concentrate on advancement. And from this specialization of various people doing various things comes class structure and government, which are both aspects of civilization. Another criteria for civilization seems to be, anthropologists agree, a surplus of food, which comes, by the way, from having tools to aid in the growing of crops and this division of labor I just talked about. Writing, trading, artwork, monuments, all those kind of things, the development of science and technology are all aspects of civilizations. Societal collapse, which is also known as civilizational collapse, of course, is the failure or the fall of these complex human societies. It's characterized by the loss of cultural identity. Oh, what's happening on our southern border? And of socio-economic complexity. Gee, do you think we have a complex economy? Do you think we have a complex class system here in the United States and the Western world? The downfall of government. By the way, folks, how does the downfall of government begin? Oh, corruption and lack of trust by those that it governs. Does any of this sound familiar yet? And the rise of violence. Obviously, that's obvious. All you got to do is turn on the boob tube any given night, and if they're not censoring it, see the riots that are occurring hither, yither, and yon, and the mass shootings and other types of violence which play out daily in front of our very eyes. Now, there are causes of some of this violence, particularly gun violence, but nonetheless, it's occurring. And now I'm going to give you some historical examples of foreign invasions, mass migration, instability and collapse of societies due to changes in the weather, changes in soil condition, famines, socio-economic disruption, internal violence and division. Let's start talking about the Sea Peoples. The Sea Peoples are a very mysterious group of people. It was kind of a loose amalgamation of very fierce seaborne warriors from a number of different points on the globe. The historians know very little about these folks. They're not even sure who all constituted them. But the Sea Peoples were a powerful military force. They attacked by sea, obviously. They chewed away on empires and civilizations almost across the planet. And this is back in the Late Bronze Age. It was one of the precipitators of the Late Bronze Age collapse. The Hittite Empire began to show signs of decline after a big battle with the Egyptians in 1285 BC. It was weakened further by continuing attacks by the Sea Peoples, and eventually it was starved out of existence when the Sea Peoples captured its main port that imported grain. Because of, at that time, climate change, the Hittites and the Hittite Empire was undergoing a severe famine. So you see a combination of events transpiring here to bring down one of the major empires, one of the major civilizations of that time. The Minoan civilization, which was based in Crete, what we now know as Crete, it centered around religious rituals and seaborne trade, and it was absorbed by the Mycenaean Greece. Greece, at that time, then went into serious decline around 1200 BC, also due to various military conflicts, including the Dorian invasion from the north, and guess what? Attacks from the Sea People. In the 3rd century BC, a Eurasian nomadic people called the Zee began threatening China's frontiers. They were beat back by China, but then they turned their attention westward, and they displaced other tribes in Eastern and Central Europe, and that led to a cascade of events. None of this stuff happens in a vacuum. Every domino, every civilizational domino, every societal domino that falls precipitates the fall of many other dominoes in many other directions, in many other locations. This is a common theme of history since the beginning of man. It didn't necessarily result in the immediate downfall of other civilizations. It took time. The seeds were sown. You know, the seeds of the next and upcoming dominoes of human civilization rising and falling. Because all these events always had some type of ancillary effects. They turned fertile grounds into wastelands that could no longer grow food. They spread disease, particularly as society became more agrarian. We're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes. They upset armies. In other words, when famines came and disease came, armies didn't have enough, should we say, national transplants to put into the ranks, had to turn to slaves and to mercenaries. I mean, it's one of the things that happened with the Western Roman Empire. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes, too. So everything that occurs has a ripple effect on all other civilizations on the planet. And right now, we are under attack by China in every facet of civilizational foundations. They are students of history, and they are on the attack. They're using what history has taught them to undermine their greatest enemy and the only thing standing in their way, the United States of America. This is Reed. Here's a flash for you on financial preparedness, and I suggest you listen. The Fed just reported on 2023, the central bank itself lost billions of dollars. In addition, the government stacked $2 trillion in debt burden on the unbelievable debt. Currently, the 2024 debt load is breaking all records. It's going up $1 trillion every 100 days. The government lies, but the numbers don't. These are extremely negative events for your purchasing power. Since 2000 alone, your dollar has declined almost 90% in purchasing power. Gold, on the other hand, is up 700 to 800% as it fluctuates. You can roll over your retirement accounts to a silver or gold-backed IRA or have silver or gold shipped to you. Harvard Gold. I recommend them. Get protected today. Very conservative. Best customer service in the business. Top ratings. Great promotions. Call Harvard Gold Group, silver or gold, at 844-977-GOLD. Ask for your free investment guide. Call 844-977-GOLD or harvardgoldgroup.com.
Threads West, An American Saga, is the number one national Amazon and Barnes & Noble best-selling epic saga, recipient of 37 national literary awards. Written by rancher Reed Lance Rosenthal and serves in part as the inspiration of the acclaimed 1883 miniseries. The sweeping Threads West epic saga is our American story. Beginning in May 1854, men and women from America and Europe, England, Ireland, Norway, Denmark, Italy, and Prussia, an Oglala Sioux family, a Ute Indian family, a Spanish vaquero chased north by the Texas Rangers, an elderly black couple setting their life sails for the winds of freedom, a renegade you will revile, and an American trapper you'll love. Men and women of uncommon cultures, differing origins, competing ambitions, and their weave of the American cloth in the West. Alexandra Brown, Romantic Shorts, says, Reed Lance Rosenthal has outdone himself. Rosenthal's characters just blew me away. They are as real, if not more so, as most of the people I have ever met. Get it now. Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Kindle, Nook, Audible, or from the publishers, ThreadsWestSeries.com.
Now, those folks that were marauding throughout Southeast Asia, etc., the dominoes that affected, or should we say the dominoes that resulted from their plunderings, included the rise of Attila the Hun as the leader of the Huns. And they went as far, believe it or not, as at that time Gaul. That is today's France. I mean, an amazing story of conquest. And the Huns sacked northern Italian cities like Milan, literally burned it to the ground, and killed tens of thousands of people wherever they went. They were a major factor eventually in the collapse of the West Roman Empire after it was divided into two because it had grown so large. Then there was North Africa's populous, flourishing civilization, and it collapsed. It exhausted all its resources in internal fighting, right? That division thing. And suffering devastation, complete devastation, from the invasion of the Bedouin tribes and who ransacked all the major cities in North Africa. By the way, all the lands that were ravaged by the Bedouins were noted by an historian at the time to become completely arid and desert-like, incapable of growing food, which again precipitated further collapse of other civilizations. We've talked in previous historical stories on this subject about Genghis Khan and the Mongol hordes, who were virtually unstoppable, best light cavalry in the world, tactics that their enemies had never seen. I mean, later Mongol leaders such as Timur destroyed countless cities, slaughtered tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people. They ransacked China, Russia, the Middle East, and Islamic Central Asia. The Mongol hordes were only stopped, turned back, and decisively defeated by one peoples, the Vietnamese. How do you like that? And you know what? This is in 1471, and the Vietnamese, after defeating the Mongols, kind of got a lust for conquest of their own, and they divided into two camps, you'll never guess. Oh yeah, the North and the South. You think all that started in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s? Oh, no, 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 no. Oh, no, no, no. The seeds of what happened there in the Vietnam War were sown almost 500 years before. Vietnamese pushed south, kind of an uneasy truce between two rival domineering families, and they subjected the Chams, C-H-A-M-S, and that entire Southeastern Asian territory to their whims and their control. And then the Vietnamese turned against one another. You know that internal strife? Divided we fall and united we stand. There was a family by the name of the Trinh family in the north and the Nguyen family in the south, and they went at it hard. First of all, they were in a rivalry to seize more Cham provinces. and they were seized by the Nguyen warlords. In the end, the Nguyen family took control of Vietnam and established a dynasty, but they had been weakened by the literally centuries-long fight with the Chams, the rivalry between them and the Trinh, and the civilization of the Vietnamese and their dynasty collapsed. Well, you know, there are other examples of this. The New Kingdom of Egypt. We've talked in the previous shows about the Old Kingdom of Egypt. I told you it resurrected. The New Kingdom of Egypt managed to defeat the Sea Peoples, the same Sea Peoples that had defeated the Hittites and taken their one port. And the Egyptians just couldn't quite get it together. They went into a steep decline. The collapse of all the other societies of the Eastern Mediterranean, this is part of the Bronze Age collapse, disrupted established trade and travel, and that severely affected Egypt. It also started a kind of region-wide economic depression. Government workers in Egypt went either unpaid or underpaid. That began the first labor dispute in recorded history. I mean, it's really fascinating. And basically, the government folks said, we're not working anymore until we get paid. This completely undermined royal authority because, obviously, if government folks weren't working, the government couldn't do anything for its subjects. And its subjects, therefore, began to hate the government and distrust it. Oh, is any of this sounding familiar? Well, food prices rose. There was a major famine, which precipitated this rise. And the rise in food prices, which, by the way, were 8 times their normal values, and occasionally they would spike to 24 times their normal values, started a huge inflation in everything. And that further weakened Egypt because it destroyed, or further destroyed, its economic underpinnings, which were already under severe stress due to famine, which was being caused by natural climate change, and by continual wars, which they won with the Sea People, and which, ironically, they won with the Hittites. In the early 14th century AD, Britain suffered repeated rounds of crop failures due to unusually heavy rainfalls and flooding. Most of the livestock either starved or drowned. Food prices skyrocketed. King Edward II, he attempted to rectify the situation by imposing price controls. Well, as always, that backfired. Vendors simply refused to sell at such low prices. The act was abolished by the Lincoln Parliament in 1316. But all across continental Europe, things were at least as just as bad. In the meantime, they were fighting off invasions or incursions, like in the north of England by raids from Scotland, and across France and England, the Hundred Year War. All of these things, which were precipitated, by the way, most historians feel, by the eruption of Mount Tararua, and I probably mispronounced it, in New Zealand, which erupted in 1314. That seemed to cause this precipitous change in climate and the rains, and it also kind of was the beginnings of the Little Ice Age. Like the Tonga eruption 2 years ago, I have a video posted for you this week. Watch it. It will explain much of what's going on about the so-called climate change from human activity. Not so much. The Hundred Year War and the Black Death that soon followed, and I'll explain that in just a minute, why this was all tied in, along with this unavoidable change in weather, which led to famine, it decimated Europe's population. In fact, all told, between disease and war and famine and all the other calamity, Europe lost half its population. Half of its population, Europe and Britain. You know, historically, the dawn of agriculture, even though this is kind of counterintuitive, led to the rise of contagious diseases, coupled with climate change events that could not be foreseen, foretold, or changed, famine, decomposition of soils so that crops could not be produced, the death of livestock. But when agriculture really began to rise, when the hunter-gatherer societies became agricultural societies, that's when cities were established. There were higher population density. There was more frequent contact with livestock. There was greater contamination of water supplies, higher concentrations of garbage, poor sanitation, lack of medical knowledge, superstitions, and sometimes the combination of disasters that we've talked about have reshaped societies, Western, Eastern, all around the globe, in ways, well, profound ways. Hundreds of millions of people, perhaps billions over the course of time, have died. Empires have fallen, civilizations have collapsed, and entire generations have been annihilated. And as people became less agrarian, as cities sprang up, as all these conditions continued to manifest themselves almost exponentially. Disease and biological warfare, intentional introduction of disease by enemies, became more and more a factor in the rise and fall of civilizations. You know, there were three plagues that brought down the Roman Empire. Oh, sure, it was subject to corruption, and it was subject to inflation, it was subject to economic pressures, it was too far flung, it was overextended. There are many, many factors. But the three kind of nails in the Roman Empire coffin were three plagues. The first was the Antonine Plague, AD 165 to 180. It was probably smallpox or measles, most historians agree, and probably started in China and spread to the west via the Silk Road. Dreadful mortality rates. One-third to one-half of the population, 60 to 70 million people. Remember, the world was pretty tiny then, perished. Roman cities suffered from overcrowding, poor hygiene, unhealthy diets, and they became the epicenters of the disease. Gee, is this sounding familiar, folks? The disease reached as far as Gaul, you know, modern-day France. It mauled the Roman army. I mean, decimated it. In fact, along the Rhine, where Rome had built huge defenses against the Germanic peoples, the legions were so decimated that they had to be filled with freed slaves, German mercenaries, criminals, and gladiators. Eventually, obviously, the Germanic tribes broke through the Roman line. Then, the situation was further compounded because the deaths of all these people, it created an economic depression, which led to a food crisis and a drastic shortage of businessmen, which disrupted trade because the businessmen had died. Ultimately, it was the Roman army, Roman cities, the size of the empire, and the trade routes, without which, ironically, Rome would have had no power or influence, and would not even have existed, that facilitated the spread of these diseases. People had to have somebody to blame. They blamed Marcus Aurelius and his co-emperor, Lucius Verus. So it created a rift between the government and the people. And of course, you had to have other scapegoats. So many in the Roman Empire blamed Christianity for the spread of disease. You know, a kind of a theme that was taken up by Hitler later, blaming Jews for disease in Nazi Germany. The onslaught of disease was followed by another plague, the Plague of Cyprian, from AD 249 to AD 262. And then it was followed by another plague, perhaps the worst of the three, the Plague of Justinian, from 541 and 542. Together, these plagues cracked the foundations of the Roman Empire. And if they did not cause its proximate decline, they were one of the key factors in the collapse of probably the greatest empire the world has ever seen on a relative basis. Interesting to note that the Western Roman Empire had basically collapsed. It was overrun by the Germanic tribes for all the reasons we discussed, but the Eastern Empire kind of stood its ground. And because there was a peace treaty with the Persians, Emperor Justinian the Great, i.e. the Justinian Plague, was able to concentrate on recapturing territories that had belonged to the Western Empire. And his generals achieved a number of really big victories, recaptured a great deal of the ground. But the Plague of Justinian, which I just talked about, stopped the reemergence of the Eastern Roman Empire, and in the end, doomed it to failure. Other effects, too, other unforeseen and incredible effects, which affected civilizations and their rise and fall. Before the Justinian Plague, the Mediterranean world, you know, the Bronze Age, was very commercially successful. I mean, culturally stable. After the plague, it fractured into a trio of civilizations battling for power. You know, that division thing again. The Islamic civilization, the Byzantine Empire, and what became known as medieval Europe. With so many people dead from the plagues, the supply of workers, many of whom, by the way, were slaves, was critically short, and landowners had no choice if they were going to till their land but to lend pieces of land to persons that they called serfs, who worked the land in exchange for military protection and other privileges. This was the beginnings of feudalism. During this time period, because all civilizations and all countries and all empires have enemies, you know, there's always somebody who wants what you have. It is just the laws of nature. Whether you are a nation, whether you're an empire or civilization, or whether you are simply Joe Blow across the street, biological weapons developed during this time. They were probably used before. I've given you a whole history lesson, or should I say a historical story, on the use of biological weapons and their evolution over time several months ago. You can go into the archives on therightsideradio.com, type in biological warfare, biological weapons, and listen to those shows. But as biological weapons began to be used as armies and folks who wanted to conquer other civilizations. They began to realize that biological weapons are economical. Basically, they turn an enemy casualty, every enemy casualty that's infected, into a delivery system of the weapon. And as such, they were favored in armed conflicts in the past. Did you know that more soldiers died of disease than in combat until recently? And by recently, I mean World War I. Civilizations most adaptable, most historically oriented, most patient, and should we say most cunning in its long-term planning is the Chinese, and they learned the lessons of biological warfare very early. Huh, how do you like that? So what have we learned over the last 3 weeks? Civilizations never survive. They always fall. A combination of factors. Wars, overspending, overreach, overexpansion, greed, corruption, plagues and health problems, climatic changes, natural climatic changes, I might add, thousands of years ago, not today, the involvement in multiple wars, the debasement of currency, overexpenditure, foolish uses of treasury, i.e. taxpayer money, technological advances, i.e. the Bronze Age I brought you the week before last, ossification, sticking with the old, not adopting to the new. That's a given. That's history. Thousands of years of history. Countless civilizations. And of course, division, either caused by all those events I just mentioned or purposely by the government for one reason or the other. And immigration, the loss of culture. But let's get to the rest of the story. In all those cases I brought you, oh, and I'm sure there were selfish individuals who were applauding the downfall of each civilization. However, in no fall of any civilization was the fall precipitated deliberately, intentionally, from within. And for those of you now shaking their heads, going, oh, here comes another conspiracy theory, let me throw out a whole bunch of dots for you, and you can connect them as you wish. And as you think about it, tie it into all the history I've brought you over the last 3 weeks, and today's show. Let's start off with the radical agenda of the globalist elite. Let's take Ted Turner, CNN founder. He's an agenda contributor to the World Economic Forum, you know, our buddy Klaus Schwab. This is Reed. Here's a flash for you on financial preparedness, and I suggest you listen. The Fed just reported on 2023, the central bank itself lost billions of dollars. In addition, the government stacked $2 trillion in debt burden on the unbelievable debt. Currently, the 2024 debt load is breaking all records. It's going up $1 trillion every 100 days. The government lies, but the numbers don't. These are extremely negative events for your purchasing power. Since 2000 alone, your dollar has declined almost 90% in purchasing power. Gold, on the other hand, is up 700 to 800% as it fluctuates. You can roll over your retirement accounts to a silver or gold-backed IRA or have silver or gold shipped to you. Harvard Gold. I recommend them. Get protected today. Very conservative. Best customer service in the business. Top ratings. Great promotions. Call Harvard Gold Group, silver or gold, at 844-977-GOLD. Ask for your free investment guide. Call 844-977-GOLD or harvardgoldgroup.com. Hey, listeners. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal, your host of On the Right Side Radio, and I have a message for you. Do you want a business? Sell a product? Provide a service? Have a message you want to get out? Do you believe in freedom, the Constitution, and America? Here's your opportunity to reach 69 million sets of ears in scores of markets around the country, including 5 of the top 10 and 15 of the top 50 markets in the United States of America. Very affordable, very flexible, 30 and 60 second packages available. Give your business a boost and help America get the truth. Call Francis at Media Airtime at 602-300-8250, 602-300-8250, or write Francis at MediaAirtime.com. That's Francis at MediaAirtime.com. Thank you. He was quoted in Audubon magazine, this is just in the last few months, that the planet is, quote, grossly overpopulated and that extreme depopulation measures are necessary. A total population of 250 to 300 million people, a 95% decline from present levels, would be ideal, unquote. By the way, he's invested $125 million into foundations dedicated to population control initiatives, United States and internationally. And he plows $6 million annually into various organizations from his endowment. Such organizations aimed at slashing global population from its current 8 billion to 2 billion or fewer. By the way, that happens to align with Klaus Schwab, you know, the founder of the WEF. And by the way, he's changed the name of the Great Reset because of all the backlash, you know, to, instead of technocracy, to a humanocracy initiative. Okay, terrific. At the 2024 World Government Summit in Dubai, this is just February, folks, the members were in consensus that a 90 to 95% reduction in humanity would conveniently resolve all their so-called problems and facilitate their achieving their audacious and contrived net zero objectives. That should make you feel good. So they have your back, folks. They have your back. Here's some more dots for you. Texas, huge agricultural state, really kind of the backbone of the cattle industry. On April 10th, 2023, a dairy farm in Dimmitt, Texas, about 60 miles from Amarillo, exploded. It killed 18,000 dairy cows. They haven't figured out what caused that yet. On February 27th, 2024, a state of emergency was declared. There was a wildfire, you heard about it, Stinnett, Texas, about 60 miles northwest of Amarillo. It burned 1 million acres. This is all prime pasture land for 88,000 cattle and killed about 7,000 cattle. And the cause of that fire remains, quote-unquote, officially unknown, unquote. On April 1, 2024, and that's, I think, a week ago, right? Texas Health and Human Services reported the first human case of avian influenza in Texas and said that it was transmitted by a dairy cow to a farm worker. The CDC has now issued an emergency declaration saying there's nothing to worry about and it's, you know, not going to hurt you. But, and in the meantime, avian flu has now been detected in cattle herds in 5 different states, and they think that it may be in others. Texas, Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, and Idaho. Do you remember when hoof and mouth came along about 20, 25 years ago? Well, think about what happened to the cattle industry. Prices plunged precipitously, and then, of course, meat prices went up dramatically after that. Not to mention the ruination of many ranchers and farmers. And who's running around buying land right now? Do you remember our stories on how to protect your private property? A rancher doesn't have a lot of choice when he loses all his cows to a disease, which, by the way, very few are insured against. I'd love to see how much land Bill Gates has bought or will buy down in the Texas Panhandle. On April 9th, 2024, the Texas Agriculture Commissioner, I assume he's fairly conservative, appointed by Abbott, announced that Calmaine Foods, who, by the way, is the largest producer of eggs in the United States, in fact, one of the largest suppliers of food in the United States, that their facility in Farwell, Texas, 40 miles west of the dairy farm that exploded in Dimmitt, would have to cull, that is, kill, 2 million chickens because bird flu was discovered in the facility. What do you think is going to happen to the price of chicken and eggs? Or to the food supply? If you do a little research, watch those videos. It will be eye-opening, I guarantee you. And we come to find out that the bio industry, you know, big pharma, has a big operation in Amarillo. But it gets better than that, folks. Madro Nutrisciences, or MXNS, which is a division of BioMaro, has a microbiology lab in Amarillo. That's a major French biotech company that built, hold on to your bippy, the lab in Wuhan, China, that opened in 2018. Oh, it gets better. The CEO of Moderna, you know, Jab Moderna, Stefan Bonsall, he was the CEO of BioMaro when the company designed and began construction of the Wuhan lab. Huh. And BioMaro, by the way, is a collaborator of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. What could go wrong here? So now we have the fear mongering ramping up on H1N1, both for the food supply, poultry, beef, eggs, and for humans. And is this the disease X, you know, that the WHO and the others were playing their pandemic games with over the last year or two? Check out the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness and Innovation. And by the way, it still gets better. Did you know that there's been gain-of-function research done in Wisconsin and Japan, funded by, oh, that's right, the little monster elf Fauci and the NIH? Gain of function, in other words, getting H1N1, the avian flu, to jump species. Kind of sounds like 2020 and COVID, doesn't it? And once again, they're blaming it on the animals. In this case, not a wet market, but you know, those nasty cows that blow out all that methane, and those chickens, those terrible chickens. By the way, just 2 days ago, New York City Health Department found birds in Central Park that had avian flu. Once again, the articles with links, by the way, to all the information I'm giving you are on the website along with videos. But folks, it gets better. You know, it's like a late night horror flick, I guess. So the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, you know, funded 50% by the pharma groups, they're issuing a health alert network, HAN, a health advisory to inform clinicians, state health departments and the public of a recently confirmed human infection with highly pathogenic avian influenza. By the way, this gain of function was funded not only by NIH, folks, but by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The main players in this case being a guy by the name of Ron Fouchier, who works at his Erasmus Medical Center in the Netherlands, and Yoshihiro Kawakawa, hopefully I pronounced that right, working at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and the University of Tokyo. And in 2023, despite getting funding reinstated for this gain of research in 2017 by claiming they now had new protocols to contain any nasty pathogens that might get out and hurt anybody, the Charostad Group in 2023 indicated that the highly pathogenic, I'm quoting, avian influenza H5N1 is an imminent threat, unquote. And along these lines, we have Oregon. I've told you about their persecution of small farmers up there based on water. They've now elevated that persecution to a critical level. Critical. In other words, if you're a small farmer, you're toast. In fact, Oregon is going so far as to say you aren't even allowed to have chickens anymore. No more chickens for you, folks. You think it's a little violation of private property rights? You think it deserves some thought and maybe financial preparedness on our parts? And then, of course, we have climate change, except it's not the climate change they're telling you about. It's engineered climate change. Several years ago, I posted a video on the website called The Dimming. It's reposted for this show. It's incredible. You got to watch it. It's long. I'm telling you, it's well worth it. And there's other videos, including admissions, by the way, by several major universities that they're experimenting with various ways to block out the sun. I told you, I think 5 or 6 months ago that George Soros was investing $100 million in a plan to block out the sun. What do you think that does to agriculture, the food supply, and other kind of basic components of life on Earth? And did you know, hold on to your bippy, folks, that in conjunction with the United States military, CSL, a huge pharma company, has already developed a vaccine. Now, the first vaccine that they developed was cell-based, you know, your typical vaccine, dead virus or whatever tissue you're trying to immunize against. But they've just developed another one. That's right, and it's mRNA. Here we go again. And our government, folks, has already pre-purchased the vaccines. I'll draw your attention to the fact that it is almost exactly 4 years ago, March of 2020, that election year, that the whole COVID nonsense started. And here we are, March, April of 2024, another election year. You know, obviously they thought their playbook worked pretty good last time. I have a feeling it's not going to work so great this time. Remember the great word in the English language, no, and the great phrase, I will not comply? You might want to start practicing those. And by the way, the assault on small farmers is occurring in a number of different states. Oregon is just kind of in the lead. Good for them. Which brings us to a point I made last week, which is the most important thing you can do is win elections. Okay? Everything else is secondary. You don't get gain of function funded. You don't get abortion restrictions passed so that they last. You don't get fiscal responsibility embedded in the government unless you win elections. Because when you win elections, all those people appoint the bureaucracy. And by the way, you know, the Biden administration, you know, all the job numbers. Well, this month they added more than 70,000 government jobs. That's more than 1.5 million government jobs that this administration has put in place just in the last 2 years. Now, I want you to think about that. Think about the salaries. Each one of those people is making $100, give or take, $1,000 a year, plus benefits, plus pension, plus Social Security, you name it. And every hire increases the bureaucracy. It increases, remember our historical stories on the collapse of civilization, it increases ossification and it increases complexity, right? Two of the key factors in the fall of civilizations. Which brings us to our little section on election fraud. We're not going to get to rat-a-tat-tat. but I will make it up to you next week. So number one, these guys are really good at subterfuge election fraud, since a lot of their antics in 2020 have been found out and are kind of being tracked. I don't know how well by the Republicans, but being tracked. So Joe Biden announced just a week ago that he's now going to try and cancel student debt. The Supreme Court already told him he can't. About $6 billion worth for public service workers. You know, all those people he's hiring. 78,000 eligible workers, in fact. And he's trying to make an end around using your tax dollars. This is key. They're using your tax dollars to commit election fraud. To perpetrate something already ruled illegal. To buy votes using your money is not so good. In Connecticut, and by the way, this is happening in other states. That governor up there, Lamont, unbelievable. The state is just pathetic. They're now trying to take non-citizen designation off the driver's license of illegal aliens. I mean, the fact that an illegal alien even has a driver's license in Connecticut is one thing. Now they're trying to remove any indication that that person is not a citizen. Why do you think they'd be doing that in 2024? And then in another illegal act, not that they care, Obama's third-term administration instructed the post-secondary education assistant, post-secondary means college, Michelle Asha Cooper, another communist, to mandate to universities that they need to use federal work-study funds to pay students to, quote, support voter registration activities. And, of course, all these students are organized by, oh, that's right, left-wing NGOs. Once again, stuffing your tax dollars in their pockets to steal your votes. By the way, it's never before been practiced or legal to pay students for, quote, federal work-study employment involving voter registration activities that take place on or off campus, unquote. And guess who's kind of in charge of that? Oh, senior Obama advisor and best friend Valerie Jarrett. Remember her? She heads up an outfit called Civic Nation, tax-free nonprofit, of course. And the group's mission statement says, quote, to create a more inclusive, equitable America, unquote. And one of their programs is the, quote, All-In Campus Democracy Challenge, unquote, which is designed to force colleges, using federal funds as the bribe, to pressing voting and registration among students. And by the way, if you think this lawfare that's being conducted against Donald Trump in these bogus third world country trials is anything new for communists, it's not. You've seen it in Russia, you've seen it in China, you know, you've seen it in North Korea, you've seen it all over the place. Next week, I'm going to bring you more, and I'm going to bring you some other things you can do besides writing your state representatives. And by the way, folks, it begins at the local level. It begins at the local level. Your town, your county, your state is your protection against the federal behemoth. Get control of the foundation of the country, and then you can reach up to its highest limits. And we're running out of time. You understand that, right? Demographically, we're running out of time. Financially, we're running out of time. And in terms of liberty, the ability to act, to speak your mind, is dwindling. Time is not our ally. Get off the couch. And we're out of time, but next week we're going to talk about COVID because it's very apropos with the way disease kills off civilizations, you know, and how it wrecks economies and all that kind of stuff. And they played the game with us with COVID, and now lots of stuff is coming out. There's a bunch of articles posted under Rat-a-tat-tat, and on the COVID page this week, there'll be more next week. And next week, we're going to get into the sort of details of, should we say, the peeling of the onion of this treason and fraud and crimes against humanity. We're out of time. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Remember, look in the mirror, repeat after me, and repeat it with conviction. I will muster. I will stand. I will not comply. I will never give in. I will never stop fighting. I will join with those in these United States and around the globe who love freedom as I do, and we will win. Oh, yes, we will. Keep the wind at your back. I'll talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, go to OnTheRightSideRadio.com. Click on Show Archives, and you'll find all of Reed's shows and a terrific array of informative articles, videos, and reference pages. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of On the Right Side Radio with Reed Lance Rosenthal.